Dr. Geneva Speaks. Thank you for tuning into Dr. Geneva Speaks, where you'll hear amazing leaders from across the nation and around the world. Your host, Dr. Geneva Williams, a cutting-edge, transformational leadership coach, hopes and believes this show will enlighten, entertain, and inspire you to make a difference in the world. So listen up as Dr. Geneva Speaks.
Good day, good day, good afternoon. I am not Dr. Geneva. Dr. Geneva is out today. I am Pam Perry, but she will be returning with us next week. But we have a great show lined up for you today. We have Lowell Perry Jr. on the show today, talking today about social profit, what it is, and how to use it to help communities. Lowell Perry Jr. believes social profit organizations is a term that can better capture the contribution made by entities that have too long been known as charities or nonprofit groups. According to the Chronicle of Philanthropy, such a term would also give us a new way to name the people who support the organizations that promote the public good. Social investors, a term that better reflects this generation of hands-on donors who are willing and able to extend this nation's great tradition of American generosity. Today's social investors seek and expect a return on their efforts in the form of an increase in the greater good. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Lowell Perry. He's an innovative executive leader with a unique business background, including a proven track record of success in team building, fund development, strategic alliances, general management, government relations, as well as significant expertise in diversity and inclusion as a viable growth strategy. Currently, he is the director of the Cleveland Central Promise Neighborhood. He has developed a reputation as a visionary business thought leader and created the Strategic Corporate and Community Engagement Department while with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of America to connect individual resources and opportunities for local board member recruitment of corporate employees of color. He's provided contract consultant leadership to Family Wellness of Dallas as executive director after serving as Big Brothers Big Sister Chief Diversity Officer, Senior VP, Corporate and Community Engagement. Prior to that, Perry was CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Middle Tennessee that led the agency from 300 kids served in 2005 to set records of 2,812 kids served on an unrestricted, it goes in the social profit nonprofit world, unrestricted revenue of nearly $3 million in 2010. So for more about Lowell Perry, I only read just a glimpse of his background. He is also a Yale graduate, business school, and also from Detroit. So if you are looking for a connection to Detroit, Lowell Perry is from Detroit. You may recognize the name Lowell Perry Sr., which is a person that is from Detroit as well, and that is his dad. But you can go to about.me/Lowell Perry Jr. and find out more about Lowell Perry. So with that, Lowell, I just welcome you to Dr. Geneva Speak Show tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Pam, you know, it's a real pleasure. I appreciate the kind words and the applause. And I got to take you on the road with me. That was a great introduction. I appreciate it. I appreciate you teeing up the idea of a social profit versus a nonprofit, which has been something that I've kind of landed on as, you know, it's part of my own personal ministry, really. I mean, my background had been more on the for-profit side of things, ran a manufacturing company, had my own consulting business for a number of years. And when I was looking for something to create a more meaningful life for myself, I happened on this sector with Big Brothers Big Sisters in Nashville as the CEO of a regional agency there. And that began this journey in trying to help children and families facing adversity. Obviously, most of them look like you and I. So, you know, there's that commonality there. But, you know, it, just looking at how the sector had operated, how it had been birthed, you know, several hundred years ago, and how little it has changed in terms of, you know, a small percentage of people controlling the wealth in this country, giving just enough money to organizations, whether it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Boys and Girls Club, or anybody else, really just enough money to keep them in business each year and have them chasing after money to stay in business. And because of that, you know, more in the Band-Aid business rather than in the solutions business. And, you know, I find that unacceptable, because at stake are the lives of young people. You know, so that kind of tees up my whole thought for the day. You know, I was real excited about being able to share some thoughts and some ideas around the idea of collective impact and collaboration as a means to achieve certain things in this sector.
I like something that you wrote, Lowell. It was promise is a social profit. So make no mistake, Promise is a nonprofit business. Non can bring a negative connotation, so you prefer the term social profit, as there is a return on investment involved in the work of these organizations focused on solutions for challenges facing society. So kind of talk a little bit about where the term social profit is, because you talk about all members of society are shareholders of these social profits. So kind of dig deep a little bit into where that came from and how you actually apply it to what you do now.
Well, you know, I wish I could say I coined that phrase, but you're right. I read it in an article years ago in the Chronicle of Philanthropy and adopted that term because it more closely aligned with my thought around it and a different kind of approach. You know, rather than the stereotype of the so-called nonprofit that's struggling and somebody walking around, an executive director with a tin cup begging for money, like, you know, they're there as some kind of a pest. You know, people ought to be happy when someone walks in their office talking about doing something that's going to enhance the community, that's going to make sure that, you know, years from now, particularly as the demographics continue to change in this country, that we're going to have a well-educated and well-trained workforce if we invest in them. And so as altruistic as some people may be, at the end of the day, we all still want to know what's in it for me. What's my return on investment?
Right.
So using that term social profit tends to change the mindset of an organization to where they're starting to think about, when I go out and I'm cultivating relationships and asking for investment in my organization to go out and do the good work that's being done in these communities, I have to think in terms of, what is the return on investment? What is the hook, if you will, that's going to get you know, whether it's a key bank, for instance, or, you know, somebody like that, a corporate partner, Ford Motor Company, to invest some money in what my organization is doing, and to be able to demonstrate, here's the return on that investment. Here's what happens if you don't invest. You know, what's the economic impact? You know, we're in a society now where people care about the economy, and, you know, and people need to look at a social profit as a small business. I mean, we create jobs. When I was at Big Brothers Big Sisters in Middle Tennessee, when I first started there, we had 16, 18 people working, and within 5 years, we were almost to 60. You know, so you know, we contribute to the economy, but people don't necessarily look at it that way. And, you know, so we have to change the mindset, even among people within the sector, with, you know, especially board members and executive leaders and that kind of thing, sometimes are caught in the past. And, you know, this idea that somehow because I'm a so-called nonprofit, I should be struggling, I shouldn't be paying people well, I shouldn't be providing health care and all those other kinds of things. And so consequently, you attract people to the sector. Yeah, and you get what you pay for. Now, you know, mm-hmm. never will, you know, will a Big Brothers Big Sisters or the YMCA or that kind of thing ever be mistaken for Chrysler or, you know, one of the larger for-profit entities. However, we should be thinking about attracting some of the best and the brightest there as a career and not as something that I'm going to do after I go out and do my thing and make all kinds of money. Now I somehow want to also do something good, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we need to be doing more things in the schools and, you know, at places like Yale and others, developing leaders that are dealing with social issues that really impact all of us at the end of the day, and trying to come up with viable solutions that actually create transformational change in communities. You know, and instead we focus on the transactional. You know, what can I do, you know, if I can, you know, leave a bag of clothes out on the front porch for Ark to come pick up and my social responsibility duty is done for a while until I get another phone call a few months from now, if I go volunteer for a day. But what am I really doing in my community? How can we get more people to rally around solutions-oriented activities that are going to really change what's happening on the landscape?
Mm-hmm. We're listening to Lowell Perry Jr. You're on the Dr. Geneva Speaks Show. I am your substitute host today, Pam Perry, and we're talking about social profit. And Lowell wrote something here talking about his organization, Cleveland Central Promise. It says, Promise is about ensuring adequate work is being done upstream to prevent costlier downriver cleanup. Explain that. You said a former client said that, Harvell Hendricks said especially that downriver cleanup, being from Michigan, it's like, explain what that really means.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, Harville was fond of saying that in a lot of his presentations with couples, you know. And I think that holds true for what we're trying to do. For instance, you know, with Promise, Promise is a collective impact model inspired by the Harlem Children's Zone and Jeffrey Canada and some of the success that they've had there in bringing resources together and not only a lot of things going on all at once, but bringing the proper alignment together around a common set of goals and objectives, shared achievement measurements with a common customer, if you will, kids. I maintain that if in this country, you know, and it's a whole nother show talking about the divisiveness going on in this country right now, because, you know, along ideological lines and political lines, I think that one of the things that might help mend some of that discussion is to talk about it in terms of kids. And, you know, that's been one of the things that's driving ours. And that's why I said it was timely to have this conversation, because we're going through the process now of kind of resetting the expectations and what it means to be part of a collective model. I mean, our whole thing with Promise is around a cradle to career pipeline, and, you know, that every child has access.
Instead of prison, what they call it, from prison pipeline. You got a cradle to career.
Cradle to career pipeline. And so, you know, and there's five real broad areas around there. One, along every child having access to and taking advantage of early learning opportunities. Every child has access to quality K-12 education, that residents in these communities lead the change, that parents are supported in order to give that support to their young people that are navigating their way through this ecosystem, through this pipeline, and that the community is safe and a positive type of, and again, I'll use the term ecosystem, because, you know, there are a lot of things going on all at once as these kids are navigating through this pipeline. You know, if you imagine, you know, going to Cedar Point or down to Disney World and getting on Space Mountain and that kind of thing, and, you know, we're trying to get kids moving through this pipeline, you know, jobs are an issue for people, health, nutrition, safety,
nutrition,
education, and so that requires partners to figure out how they best fit into the pipeline to contribute to how that pipeline functions. So obviously the school district, you know, what are they doing to ensure that instead of to the schools that are struggling the most, why is it that historically in the areas that struggle most, we send the youngest teachers with the least amount of experience, you know, a lot of Teach for America teachers, and nothing wrong with Teach for America and that kind of thing. But, you know, if you're putting together, you know, we're putting together a team to go compete in the Olympics, you know, we go and get our best and brightest to be involved in that kind of thing. Exactly. You know, you have to have a good mix of veterans and passionate young people. I mean, so that's what we're looking at, and seeing how each of these partners fit into it in a results-based accountability model where we hold each other accountable. Promise, and the whole thing is promise, but, you know, our organization is really kind of like that, you know, the people in the control booth that are monitoring the ride and making sure that it's functioning everywhere, and if something's going wrong in one place, getting the resources there that are needed, having the collective conversation. But really that key point is those residents. You know, are they at the forefront? I mean, we've got a group that we call ambassadors, and they go through leadership training. They live in the community. Oh. They're leaders in the community. And so trying to give them some tools. And, you know, one of the things that have happened organically is some of these individuals have gotten inspired with their work for these children. And have gone back to school and gotten their associate's degree. Some have gone on and gotten employment. You know, they're working in other places because everyone is putting people first. And, you know, Pam, I you know, one of the things that bothers me is when I look at some of the issues of our day right now, the civil rights issues of our day, and how we tend to focus on the surface level things. Like, you know, I've been reading about and watching all the information on what's going on in Flint, you know, with the water, for instance. And I know there's a big, you know, a demonstration being planned, and folks are talking about whether or not the governor should go to jail and all like that. When what somebody ought to be taking the lead on and ought to be talking about is not about whether the governor is going to go to jail, but how come we aren't out voting in these elections to make sure that people like that don't get into office? And, you know, and that's one of the areas that's part of this ecosystem is getting people to understand the idea and the importance of civic engagement, because it's policies that are going to help drive some of these solutions. If you aren't working on the policy side of things, you're going to have a more difficult time getting some of the systemic change that's necessary to have transformation in a community. I mean, you know, another example. You know, look, I get Black Lives Matter. You know, I get that anger. I get that frustration. It sickens me every time I hear about, you know, somebody that could be one of my sons getting gunned down in the street in one of these cases of, you know, somebody out of control. But think about this. Black minds matter more because there are thousands of young kids, particularly young boys, who are being killed slowly every day because they aren't reading at grade level. And starting in third grade, if they aren't up to par, you know, we're, instead of trying to figure out how we can help these young people, you know, we're trying to figure out how many more prison cells we ought to build. And there are people that are making money out of the prison industry. And we've got kids that are graduating from eighth grade going into ninth grade. In ninth grade, they're taking sixth and seventh grade courses. And then when they come out of high school, you know, like the high school we have in Cleveland, they have an average ACT score of 14 right now, which is not going to get you anywhere. And so now you spend some time and money taking remedial courses that don't count toward a degree, that don't qualify for scholarship assistance. And, you know, and many of these young folks don't have the money, so they have to postpone going that direction and maybe get, you know, detoured along the way. So why aren't we demonstrating in the street and complaining about the fact that too many of our kids can't read? Why aren't we doing something about that? Where is that same level of righteous indignation? That breaks my heart, you know, to see these young people that could very easily be my son, you know, your daughter, you know, that kind of thing, that are being killed off systematically. And, you know, again, that's another show. There's some that believe that this is by design, you know, and that's the reason that nothing gets done about it. And the only way that it does is if the people finally rise up and say, enough is enough. We're going to educate
and that's what leaders.
And make sure. Go ahead, say what you're going to say.
And that's what leaders are for. That is what leaders should do, and that's what leaders are really called to do. It's influence.
Absolutely.
They have to influence. Just like you said, the Promise has their ambassador, where they have the academy, where they're training leaders, and those leaders then influence other people. It's kind of like that old commercial where it said, and so on and so on and so on, where they're just like, you know, down the chain, really just influencing others. So leaders, it starts somewhere, and that is really like the main thing. It's like, when will people, you know, call it a movement, but somebody has to start the movement and then and allow someone to lead the movement to, like you said, where you the Promise, where you are in the Cleveland Central Promise, where you're like the person that's not really running the ride, but you're making sure that every piece is working, or if a piece is not working, then you go and get the resources to make sure that it continues. And that is true leadership, because you're not trying to get all the shine, you know, you're trying to just making sure that the solution is being addressed. And that is what a true leader does. They do that at the core, just making sure that it is addressed.
That is absolutely right. And that is one of the most difficult parts of collaboration, of a collective impact model, because too many of us have wanted to collaborate sometimes by necessity to go out and try to get a grant just to bring money in-house to stay open, you know, rather than rallying around a cause. And again, let's say that it is about the kids. And if people truly look at it as a team, and everybody is passionate about the piece that they own and are going to hold themselves and their friends accountable. And you have to have a strong shared data system where everybody agrees on what those are. And those metrics are not about finger pointing. They're about putting a flashlight on the inside of that pipeline to make sure that those children are moving through there, and we're doing everything that we have to do because of those kids. And it doesn't matter about who it is. It doesn't matter about Lowell Perry. It doesn't matter about Promise. It doesn't matter about, you know, X, Y, Z over here. It only matters about these kids. I mean, look, you know this as well as I do. We stand on the shoulders of others who sacrificed for us. You know, our parents' generation, the people that came before them. I mean, you know, the fact that we want to get out there and yell at the moon about a lot of things and scream and holler and won't get out there and do the same thing for the fact that our kids are being killed slowly every day. You know, and you know, like Martin Luther King said, look, I may not get there with you, but one day we as a people will see the Promised Land. We have to be willing to offer our shoulders up for the next generation. I do what I do for my kids, my granddaughter Olivia, my first grandchild. I mean, I do that for my kids, for those that are listening here today, and I challenge those that do hear this to do something about it. I mean, number one, just getting people to vote, and not just in a presidential election. This year is important more than ever before, but local elections. You know, local elections, state elections. And look, I'm not on here to make any kind of a political commentary, but using this as an example. I mean, people like a Ted Cruz don't just go from being a lawyer to being a U.S. senator. You know, they probably go through, they most go through state government, local government. They were mayor or that kind of thing. And if we weren't voting in those things, and those elections take an awful lot less votes, And if we actually got out and voted, I mean, when you think about if only 30% of the eligible electorate goes out there and votes in a good year, all right, think about that. And people have died for us to have the right to vote. If only 30% go out there and somebody wins half of that number, that means somebody with 15% of the eligible electorate in a city has made a decision for the other 85%. And so if we haven't done anything about it, there's nothing that we can complain about. And the only way that it's going to change, the only way that things are going to be different in our cities and that our kids are going to get the kind of education they deserve, they're going to get the kind of health care and that kind of thing that they deserve, is if we rise up and we get people out there that they vote and they take advantage of those things, because we can control that. There's some things we can't control, but that's the first step in being able to affect some change at the policy level. All of a sudden, it's not going to change tomorrow, but we have to be thinking 3 years from now, 5 years from now.
I like how you wrote about how you had the pleasure of meeting like former Congressman Lewis Stokes. Now that you're in Ohio now, and you talked about Lewis Stokes and Carl Stokes and how they were such groundbreaking leaders. And kind of talk a little bit about their, you know, a lot of people may not know Lewis Stokes or Carl Stokes or their stories, but kind of give, you know, those are the, I guess you would say, those are the, they broke the mold kind of people. One was the first African-American to be a mayor of a U.S. city.
Carl Stokes. And then, you know, Lewis Stokes was an iconic congressman for many years. And both of these young men, they hailed from a housing project that's called Outhwaite in the Cleveland area. And so, I mean, there's a great museum. If anybody ever visits Cleveland, it's a great city, actually. But there's a museum dedicated to former Congressman Stokes, whose son, Chuck, is a local television personality. And looks just like his dad. I had the pleasure of meeting him, but he exemplifies, and more young people need to know about people like him. And you know, we know about the so-called A-listers, Martin Luther King and Thurgood Marshall, and you know, and that kind of thing. But there are others that were in the trenches, you know, like my father, Lowell Perry Sr. You know, the things that he did for people, and he did it without thought
behind
of what
scenes.
He would get in return. And that's what we have to be
able to
get. We have to be willing to be that kind of a leader that's not going to be there to take all the credit, that's going to clap and say, "Yay, team, we won." And that's all that should matter. You know, not I scored all these points, because what happens there is that, you know, you can score 40 points and still lose the game, and what have you actually gained? You know, so we have to change our mindset, you know, and it is, again, it's no easy task when you have a group full of egos, but also you have people that are caught in an unsustainable business model that is the so-called nonprofit sector, where essentially, you know, it's almost a form of welfare, giving these organizations just enough money to keep them in business every year, and they can't invest in growth to reach population levels of service. It is stuck at that program level, and where transformation comes is when you can really address what is the population level that you're dealing with. You know, I'd love to talk to Michael Moore and get him to do some kind of a special project on this issue, because I think, you know, some of the things that he's done in the past and the things that he's put out there can be very controversial, but they're things that have to be said. And I don't think there's any accident that, you know, the so-called division that's going on in this country, you know, you hear people out there sitting there and trying to make it sound like the president is responsible for it. Yeah, he's responsible for it, not because he caused it, but because of who he is. And people don't want to talk about that. But, you know, now there are folks out there that the whole idea of race and inequality and lack of an inclusive culture is now on the forefront. We have an opportunity to do something about it. So we can either sit there and contribute to the chatter and the yelling back and forth, or we can focus on the solutions. And it starts with educating these young people and preparing them for that next phase, because right now they are being locked out of an opportunity to pursue the American dream, because they're locked in to a circumstance where they may be born into, and far too many of them are being locked up. Because, you know, we're disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. So what are we going to do to change that so that we're not talking about this 20 years from now? That's
right,
something else that
right.
breaks my heart. That, you know, this has been a something that, you know, this is not new conversation, but somebody needs to do something about it. And
well,
I love, you know, and I'm trying to do all I can.
Right. And we have we're almost out of time. And Lowell Perry Jr., oh, my goodness, this is so good, so inspiring. And, you know, everyone should be raising their hand and says, yes, I'm going to join this movement, because we are tired of watching and reading all the negative press about young people and, you know, what,
yep.
what's going on, their lives being wasted and that sort of thing. Lowell is the director of the Cleveland Central Promise Neighborhood, a former senior executive with Big Brothers Big Sisters America. He's a longtime advocate for children and families facing adversity. You can follow him on Twitter at Lowell Perry Jr. And also you can follow CLE_Promise. That's the Cleveland Promise. And you can also visit their website, clevelandpromiseneighborhood.org, where you can find out more information. And if you're in the Cleveland area, definitely join the movement. If you're in Detroit area, there's other areas. Detroit Public Schools, they need help. You can join and volunteer with that. But whatever it is, don't not do anything. I know that's probably wrong, but don't not do anything. You have to do something. So, Lowell, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close out the show today? And Dr. Geneva just says thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on here. And, you know, I do recall that there was a question about what I want my legacy to be when it's all said and done. And, you know, I just want people to know that I'm a godly man who stood for something real. It was a good husband, father, and son, and that helped to really affect some change in the social profit sector to move us from this current mindset of transaction to one of transformation, one of solutions rather than Band-Aids where we're at. And you know what? You know, the Lord has given me this passion and these ideas, and I just hope he continues to give me platforms like these to talk about it and try to inspire people to action. And you said it absolutely right. There are a lot of ways that people can be involved. The only option that we're not given today, Pam, is to do nothing, because if you do nothing, you are part of the problem.
That's true. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Lowell Perry Jr., thank you so much for joining us today.
What a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to Dr. Geneva Speaks. Dr. Geneva Williams, an expert facilitator and leadership coach, lecturer, and keynote speaker. For more information on Dr. Geneva, visit her online at www.drgenevaspeaks.com. That's drgenevaspeaks.com.